Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun, to all the God children, Mojuba Egun, to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun, to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun, to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun, to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe-o.
Ashe-o. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC and New Power Radio Network. We began UAC after the unjust sermon verdict of July 2013, and again, always appreciate you for allowing us to serve you by being on the air for the past 4 years. We ask that you please support our sponsors, Manhood Raising Culture, headed up by my co-host on Wednesday night, James Jones. You can find him as James Jones on Facebook, as well as Manhood Raising Culture as a group and like page. Also, please support our brother Arlie Gordon out of Detroit. You can find him as Arlie Gordon on Facebook as well as on the World Wide Web at Unity Design unitedunity.com. And unity is spelled UNITEE. And, of course, we never want to forget our beloved brothers and sisters who are behind enemy lines and the loved ones, family, and friends that they represent. So please reach out to Unheard Voices, the Free Alabama Movement, and the Free Ohio Movement, respectively on Facebook and on the World Wide Web at freeohiomovement.org and freealabamamovement.com. So tomorrow there is the Millions for Prisoners March, and my guest this evening is Brother Asifa Osmosa and Brother Khalid Judd. Welcome, brothers. How y'all doing this evening?
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Ashe, yes, I can. Very well.
Okay.
So what's
okay, this
going
is Brother
on,
Asifa.
Please? Ashe, Brother Asifa, I'd like to yield to you first. Please introduce yourself, and then Brother Khalifa, you can go next. Please introduce yourself to the listeners.
Okay. How you doing? My name is Brother Asifa Nabiru Omasa. I'm out of Columbus, Ohio, Panther chapter. Also, Black Nations United is our organization. It's a formation of the Panther chapter here in Columbus. We got permission to get started on Dr. David Hill here, Elaine Huggins, and some of the other chapter members that were knowing of the works that we've been doing over the years. And we're trying to make some movement. We joined the Free Ohio Movement to help advocate the free political prisoners, also abolish prison slavery that is currently existing at the time. And we're going to move forward and move ahead in our strength and with in unity and our numbers.
Ashe.
I yield. I'm sorry.
That's okay. We will use the friendly around here. No worries.
Okay. Can you hear me, Queen?
Introduce yourself? Ashe. Yes, we can, sir.
Okay. I'm Brother Khalifa, Khalifa Judge of the Free Ohio Movement, and I am a former confined citizen. I mean, former cellmate of Sadiq Abdul Hassan, who is unjustly on death row for the Lucasville uprising. And this political and prison advocacy and reform and abolitionist did not just start with me, with the Free Ohio Movement, or even with Sadiq Hassan. I was an advocate from the inside, fighting some of the unjust rules and things that were going on. You know, being Hassan, you never met. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something that I believe in. Jim Crow was torn down through legislation and through grassroots organizations who just had enough. The same thing is going to happen later. The industrial complex is going to fall. I yield.
Ashe, thank you for that introduction. We appreciate you taking the time to help facilitate the function that's going to happen tomorrow. Now, when we talk about mass incarceration and the private prison industry, what exactly, paint a picture for that, for the people who may not have had a direct impact by someone being forced incarcerated.
Well, I'm going to let Brother Khalid start off with that answer to that question, and I'll come in and interject on my end.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that is you have to understand about the prison industrial complex and how things work inside the prison itself, you're classified and then you're mandated a job. Either you work on that job, or they increase your security and they send you to a maximum security institution where you're locked down 23 hours a day so you don't have to worry about working. It's forced labor. The most ridiculous part of this whole false economy in the prison industrial complex is that prisoners make pennies on a dollar. And I know that the at least in the Ohio Department of Corrections, that economic system, the
Brother Khalifa, you faded out.
I think his phone has been acting up, sister. And I just want to tap on him where he left off, because I know his phone has been acting up periodically. Really, you know, they've been doing forced labor, and if they don't work, then they're forced to be put in solitary confinement. So that's what's been going on, and it's not fair. Matter of fact, forced labor and free labor is slavery, and even be penalized is unconstitutional. You know. It's just horrific, and I think nobody wants to do anything for free, especially when they're enlightened. They got themselves to take care of. They have needs. They need commissary up in them prisons. They have family that needs that they need to even take care of, even on the outside while they're in prison. So you know, I think that free labor movement has to be abolished. That's where we stand with this thing. You know. The Free Ohio Movement, they got a list of demands that demand the abolish of forced prison labor and prison slavery. So, you know, that's a huge part of what we're going to focus on.
Mm-hmm. So when you speak of forced labor, you know, what a lot of people don't quite get is the fact that slavery, one, was never abolished. Two, anytime you coerce someone into giving you their labor, I mean, I can't think of a worse violation of human rights and natural law and unalienable rights that we are born with. And unfortunately, I think a lot of organizations that their whole goal is technically to do good or do well by the people, they forget that. They forget the fact that this is forced enslavement that a lot of our brothers and sisters are being subjected to. And like you said, they have punishment for people that don't go along with the system. And unfortunately, those that do resist the system, not only by not providing their free labor, they are often forced into solitary confinement, having privileges taken away, like phones and visitation. And I can't think of a worse way to have to exist than be able to see your family and your loved ones. So there's a comprehensive attack, even, you know, once someone is convicted of a crime, once they're sent to jail, they still have to worry about still being punished even further than that, especially if they choose to speak truth to power. At the point that they choose to speak truth to power, they become a political prisoner if they weren't already. And technically, there are a lot of people who believe they're political prisoners regardless, just by the fact that they've been able to co-opt labor, the prices and things like that on commissary, and definitely don't pay them a livable wage. And that's, you know, been a big cry from a lot of people. That the whole system is off balance. So as far as you're concerned, welcome back, Brother Khalifa. As far as you're concerned, is there a way to reform this system, or does it need to be completely dismantled and rebuilt, if you will? And I yield.
Again, Brother Khalifa, are you on?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
You can hear me? Okay. Yeah. If I could interject something, as I was saying about the prison industry and how things work in the Ohio Department of Corrections, the same wage that those prisoners were under in the 1970s, they are still under those same wages today. There's been no cost of living increase. So, like in 1981, we were making $19 a month at the max in the tag shop making license plates for the state. That's about 11 cents an hour, according to the amount of hours that we worked. And that wage is still in place in a lot of the jobs in the institution. It's not in the automobile shop and a tag shop no more, or the sign shop, which is in Lebanon also. All the street signs you see all over the state of Ohio and probably some other states are made right there. And the thing about it, there's been no cost of living increase. As I said, the same exact wage is in place. So if you could do some type of math and try to figure that out, it would probably be mind-boggling. And you'll find out that inmates are actually working for free, because very rarely do they ever see that $19. You know, they're so oppressed economically that it's spent automatically in the commissary, in the store. So you never see it. Unless you send that money home, you don't see it. So you're working for nothing, really, because the institution has far-reaching contracts. They probably have contracts established with these companies for the next 10 or 20 years to deliver those commodities, whether we buy them or not, the inmates. So everything is already locked in place. They see the benefit of using this system to their advantage, and by housing, warehousing inmates for just specific things. But how you could cure this, there is a way to cure it partially. Right now, the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections has inside its 30 institutions. In 14 of those institutions, there's the Ohio Penal Industries. The Ohio Penal Industries in Pickaway is the most economically proficient out of all the different workshops that they have in the Ohio Penal Industries. They have a beverage center there that I think made like, $1.34 million. And then they had a meat processing plant that did close to $4 million. And that's the skill job prisoners can use that they can bring back out into society, but very rarely do you see that. What should actually be done is inmates or prisoners, they should be given a skill, given vocational classes and things in there, and OPIs, they should remove themselves from the penitentiaries and come out into society and employ those inmates when they come home. That's a viable solution, a lot more viable than what's going on right now. I yield.
Hello, Queen Tahira.
Hello.
Okay. Yes, I'm here. This is Brother Sifa. And in light of what Brother Khalifa said as well, you know, we look at not only just the exploitation of that part, but we also look at how the prisoners are counted per census as residents in those prison systems, right? And they don't have a right to even vote for what's going on in their county. So, you know, the fact that a lot of these prison systems are counted on the census per resident, then they get a whole bunch of funding. Not only that, they get federal funding, government funding to initiate different programs that a lot of the prisoners aren't even a part of. You know, so, you know, they don't even give them, you know, a lot of the extracurricular activities have been cut out. A lot of them can't even vote. So they can't express their political ideals. They can't even express their voice without being sanctioned. So, you know, I mean, it's really starting to become an issue. And a lot of these prisoners are saying, wow, I get out inside once I get released because I have that felon. Now I can't vote because I couldn't vote inside. Now it's been transferred. I can't vote outside. I think Texas is a fine example of what's going on with that as well.
Mm-hmm. Ashe. So let me ask this question again. Using the current system, can't be rehabilitated, revamped, redone, or does it need to be dismantled and done away with completely?
Well, the fact that felons can't vote once they get out of prison for a certain amount of years, I think it's at least 15, if I'm right. I think it's horrific, you know. I think the laws need to be revised, especially in the Ohio Revised Code. You know, those laws need to be revised. I think they need to be revamped and definitely to be thrown out and to be reassessed so it could be properly introduce a new type of law and new type of legislation that allow prisoners to vote. Because they do get federal funding. That's like going in our neighborhoods and the community, and you know, we could vote, but we don't get a lot of the benefits that's going on in our community. The jobs that's supposed to be coming down from the federal funds, you know. So it's basically almost a similar thing. We're just a macrocosm of the prison system. You know, the prison system is the microcosm, and out here is the macrocosm.
Are you different, Brother Khalifa?
Yes.
I yield, I'm sorry.
Yes. In response to your question, I think that the system has to be temporarily reformed and then dismantled. Because you're not going to dismantle it overnight. We know that. We have to, as we're doing right now, all this has been reformed. Because it's working towards a solution, and that ultimate solution is to do away with the prison industrial complex and the physical lockdown super technology.
Can you hear him, Brother Asifa? Because I'm having a hard time hearing him.
Yeah, we're having a hard time hearing him.
It may be because I had on speaker. It may be because I'm on speaker. But can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Because I got a heck of a reception problem where I'm at. But it doesn't make sense to be as intelligent, to be as modern as we are with regard to everything else. But when it comes to corrections, when it comes to anything that addresses the disadvantaged, the downtrodden, we don't have a solution.
Mm-hmm.
That's not acceptable to me. So I say that we reform the system in any way that we can, as fast as we can, with the objective in mind to tear the system down completely.
So one of the things that our comrade, Brother Zulu, who's in Alabama, he reiterates this all the time, that even the 13th Amendment, by its allocation and basically giving the states permission to enslave us, is a direct violation also of the 8th Amendment, which talks about cruel and unusual punishment. We had comrades that built troops to power in the state of Alabama, and their punishment was segregation. Their punishment was being forced into the heat bay, which is a closed-in shower, and he was also had his clothing removed and pepper sprayed. I mean, they really took him through it. And so why do you think more of these so-called monitoring agencies that allow these people to profit the way they are, why do you think they don't monitor closely the well-being of the prisoners? And how can we make sure that these entities, again, because these prisons are toured by agencies and groups and things like that, but they don't come back with the same feedback that we get from our confined citizens of how bad the facilities are, you know, there's questionable food and things like that. They don't come back with those results. They come back with a full checklist that allows these operations to keep on running. As a matter of fact, even when they are fined, for not allowing these groups through, they just go ahead and pay the fine and there's no accountability. So where do we go for more accountability, and who at the end of the day is responsible for that accountability? Is it the people or is it the state? And I yield.
Well, I can answer the question on accountability. Of course, it's a state-run agency. So every state-run agency has an internal has supposed to have an internal process to monitor and do their own audit of what they do, you know. So, you know, the fact that they don't do it is saying they don't do their job. And then who watches the police? You know, just to throw it out there, they are the police. They're the control system, but who watches the control system? As a community, we need to be the oversight committee to monitor the activities, speak out on the injustices that are going on, and actually use a fine lens to peek out every inconsistency that they have, because if we don't do that, then, you know, we continue to allow the abuse to go on ourselves. So it's on both ends, but the state has to be forced to reckon with their own mistakes as well. So they got to do some micromanagement within themselves to really correct the issues that's going on within the state prison agency. And I yield on that one.
Brother Khalifa?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The Institutional Inspection Committee is supposed to be the watchdog group over the institutions for the Department of Corrections. And I know at least one senator usually sits on it, and then some people appointed by the governor, I believe it is. But the thing about the Institutional Inspection Committee, just like a lot of the other committees who come in to investigate and inspect things, they always announce that they're coming. So there's a cleanup job. And everybody knows, even the confined prisoners, know not to even say anything to them. I mean, they bring tours. As I told you before when we were talking earlier this week, when I was in Lebanon Correctional Institution, they brought tours inside. And when they brought those tours inside, back then in 1985, 86, we had three different dining halls. We had segregated dining halls. We had one for all whites, one for all blacks, and then the mix, you know, where blacks and whites could come in, congregate, eat together. And during orientation, you were told not to go into the different facility if you were not of that color. If you did, you would be inciting a riot, and thus and therefore. But anyway, all of this has with how the institution inspection committee and the young people sweep things under the rug, because they know these things are going on, these atrocities and everything else. Always cleaned up. They always take you to the nice, I mean, tours and to inspect and kind of walk them where they want them to go. And they know that it's redundant and they're familiar with what they're doing. They never pose it. They never say, hey, let me go in this area right here. They just handpick where they want them to go. So they always have a glowing report when it's all said and done with.
So are those records public?
I'm sure
they are. Do you think those records are public so we can see them?
I'm sure they are. I'll check with Steve Garrett. He's excellent on that with regard to records. He's with the and he's on Facebook also. He's with Free Treatment Reform, and they are a group dealing with reentry and dealing with the parole board, reforming the parole board. So there's a national movement to have an advocate on the parole board now, a national movement, an inmate advocate at that. So. There's a lot going on with corrections. That's what I'm saying. This, the record ball is swinging, you know, and every one of us contribute to the weight of that record ball. Every one of us who fight for abolitionists, every one of us who fight for reform, every one of us who have somebody incarcerated we care about, and we participate in their incarceration and their reentry, we are that record ball.
Mm-hmm.
I should.
So in the state of Ohio, go ahead, Brother Asifa.
Oh, okay. I'm going to add on this too as well. With, you know, in light of them having rights, some of the laws don't apply. That's more in the public prison system more than the private. That different from the private prison systems. So that's another thing that we got to deal with, and you know, try to. You know, fight through, you know, with the privatization of the prison systems. I just yield on that. I just want to say that just, you know, so we could be mindful on that.
Right, yeah. The private prisons in the state of Ohio have been guaranteed a 90% occupancy rate. When they took them over, actually, Ohio was one of the first. The document that talked about the prison and how it all happened and was going to snowball into for the rest of the state. And that's exactly what has happened. And so as we look at this 90% occupancy rate guarantee, where do you think they're going to get those people from? And 90%, that's an awful lot of folks to put in those beds. So how do you think that's going to affect the overall community?
What they're doing now, they have constructed laws where you could get penalized for being in debt, like for child support, for example. You know, those become a felony, and if you don't pay your arrearage amounts or pay towards bringing that down, then they actually send you to prison. Then you're looking at the IRS, they penalizing people for not paying their quote unquote tax debts. And they're sending people to prison. So that's debtors to jail. Also, the penitentiary laws, it's against them laws too as well. So this is where they taking little things and going into people's personal lives and dissecting the citizen and making him and penalizing him for being poor, basically.
Sounds a lot like debtor's prison.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just reading.
Mm-hmm.
I was just reading on the law, the penitentiary law, where it said like, a man cannot be penalized for his wages for his labor. This is in the penitentiary law. So that's a conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. In the Constitution right there. You know, so who's enforcing them laws? Congress? Is it the Congress that's enforcing it? Is it who troubleshoots that? You know, mm-hmm. We got to know the laws. That's basically where it boils down to. Your average citizen here in this country has to know the laws of the land. And if they don't know the laws of the land, then they're penalized because they're ignorant of the laws of the land. And I yield on that one.
Okay. Brother Kalika, did you have a response to the 90% occupancy?
I'm sorry, sister. Say that again, please.
Yeah. The state of Ohio, when it privatized its prisons, guaranteed these companies a 90% occupancy rate. One, I wanted to know what you thought about that, and two, where do you think they're going to get that 90% from?
Oh, okay. Yeah, we already know where the people are going to come from. I mean, at least from my experience, I know where they're going to come from. They're going to come from the inner cities. They're going to come from wherever you can find crime, wherever you can find poverty, wherever you can find lack of education. Not necessarily lack of the resources being in the community, but the lack of people using the resources. Wherever you can find that type of resource, then you already have an audience for the penitentiary. All you have to do is just create the social forces to get them there. And that's what they do day in and day out by denying people jobs. How is it that you can get a job? And you have to remember this too, that prison is just society turned on its head.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you understand that, how is it that you can give jobs in prison, but you can't give jobs out here?
Talk about it. You got that right.
I'm sorry. Yeah, see, so when you look at it, take society, turn it on its head. What's going on here is the opposite of what's going on in there. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest way to see that. Now, and because that you have this classroom to prison pipeline, there's a source right there. There's a percentage of that 90% that you're going to get. Emily Durkheim was a French psychologist. Emily Durkheim said that I was a natural part of society. If you believe that, then you're automatic. And then you introduce dope and other things in the community. You make it very accessible. You give it to certain people on a real low price so they can flood the community. And then you got other people on the way to the penitentiary. So then, stay out.
Breaking up again, Brother Khalifa.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I back yet?
Yeah, you back.
Okay. I must be this fan I'm getting close to. But so that's the part, at least from my perspective and my population, that floods the penitentiary. People from those areas and those economic situations. It was the other side of the question.
What kind of effect do you think this is going to have on the community?
Oh, well, wow. It's having it right now. And it's you've got a lot of female head of households. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but it's a thing that's being forced upon them. You got, you've got a lot of children being raised in single-parent households, and you got a lot of children because that parent may be working one or two jobs, maybe juggling some other activities, and maybe doing some other hobbies on her own time or his own time, then you've got the television, you got PlayStation, you got Xbox watching your children now. So it's going to have a detrimental effect, meaning that you're going to have a parentless home sooner or later, even though the parents are not going to be there. So, with that happening, you got the deterioration of the family. And when the family deteriorates, the neighborhood that's how it goes. It's a domino effect. We know it because we are the best example in the history. We're the best example.
Ashe. There are some people out here, Brother Khalifa, Brother Asifa, that don't believe that the school-to-prison pipeline is real. They say, oh, get out of here. You know, parents need to do a better job of raising their children. They need to discipline them more, take away some of their hobbies and things that they like, and their children wouldn't end up incarcerated or in jail. If you factor in the public school system and the fact that they are medicating, you're right, they're medicating a lot of our children via the school system because they have on-site school psychologists, and then they also have on-site SRO, school resource officers. So on both sides, your child could be bombarded with things that they don't have the capacity to understand.
What do you say to the fan?
That's a lot of noise.
Sure.
I don't know where it's coming from. The broadcasts are recorded so people can go back and listen to them. So if it's some background noise, please just mute your phone until you're ready to talk. But what I was going to say was there are people who don't believe that the school-to-prison pipeline is real. So what do you have to say to those people? And by the fact that they are medicating a lot of our children, and on-site they have school psychologists and school resource officers, so at any point, you know, any of our children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews could be trotted off to jail. I've seen them mace children as young as 7 and 8 years old. So what do you have to say to the people that don't believe that the school-to-prison pipeline is real? And what can the Free Ohio Movement and other groups do to be more of a proactive force within that system? And I yield.
Well, I've witnessed several children that were in a real dysfunctional environment because the parents weren't, again, the mother was trying to work and, you know, try to take care of her son and child, and she couldn't find babysitters half the time. And then, you know, they're forced to have other people that don't have the child's best interest looked after, you know. So then, you know, things happen like neglect, abuse, and then, you know, the school automatically gets involved. That's like if your child get burnt with an iron, you take them to the hospital. Well, they automatically do an investigation. So the school actually does that. They investigate any inconsistencies in your home, in your personal life, because you don't have time to monitor your child or, you know, be there to raise that child with the ethics and the moral turpitude, you know, to, you know, be disciplined, you know. So, I mean, so at the end of the day, the school system becomes the monitoring system, and it becomes a disciplinary system of that family structure, or that dysfunctional family structure, so to speak. So I'm giving a little picture, painting a picture of how that's possible, so they could see that is a reality. And then you get Franklin County Children's Services that come in, or you get these agencies that come in and put your child in foster care. And then there's dysfunction going on in the foster care agencies because they're not getting along with the other children, and all them children are dysfunctional, and the list goes on and on. And so there's so many post-traumatic stress syndromes that our children are facing on an everyday basis that causes them to be railroaded into the system. So I just wanted to paint the picture. Yeah, we could resolve it by being more putting more of a structure together to help to assist parents, particularly the single mothers who really don't have that support system. There needs to be a support system. I remember back in the day there was the brother, the brother. Urban League had the father, the father programs. You know, just different type of programs that we could strengthen the African-American men and fathers to be more involved in their children's lives and taking more personal accountability, you know, to keep them from being railroaded into the system, if I may say. And I yield.
This is Brother Khalifa. Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, I can hear you. I can hear you, Brother Khalifa. Queen Tahira?
It's Queen there?
Yes, I'm here, y'all.
Okay. I wanted to address that also. And I'm so glad that you brought this subtopic up, Queen, because the prison industrial complex is fed by the schools, by so many schools. That is like that's like the farm team. The schools have become the farm team for the prison system. And what's going on is you have a zero tolerance policy in a lot of these schools. I'm dealing with this. I dealt with it last year with my youngest, well, my oldest son. I dealt with that. See, the thing that we have to understand is that education does not have to be artificial. You just have to get to the meat and bones of what you need to teach someone instead of giving them a whole bunch of fillers so you got them sticking in classrooms all day. Children learn differently. Some children learn by seeing, some by hearing, some hands-on. And some children don't just sit still when they learn. They move around. Some people and children are born with rhythm in their bones, and they have to exercise that sometimes. So you can't punish a child because he gets up out of his seat and moves around. I mean, if he's being disruptive, yeah, but just this is how he learns. Leave him alone. But see, the schools won't do that. So automatically, you're a disruption. You're a problem in the classroom. They send you out. That process is repeated and repeated. One, because you may be ADHD, or you may just have to learn different than other people. I've seen it too many times, so I know what I'm talking about. And I've seen that. I've seen the classroom to prison pipeline, because You know, they're talking about it more and more now. I was a victim of it back in the 70s. Back in the 70s, I was a victim of that class food prison pipeline. But it's real, and it's going on right now. You can train a young man to go to prison. At that age, you got a slave for life. I yield.
Ashe, well, let me ask this. You know, for all of us who claim to be conscious and aware of how detrimental the public school system is to our children, why aren't more of us forming homeschool networks? And do you think that that is something also that the Free Ohio Movement should be advocating for? And I yield.
Well, I could say this. Back in the early 80s and early 90s, we had youth leadership programs that I was very much a part of. And we went into the school systems and, you know, to bring the children out so they could talk with us, communicate with us. You know, then we had our own curriculum base that we shared with them. And it was a more socially interactive piece where they would be able to express what was going on with them without them being penalized. And see, that's, without the parents being penalized, and we were able to mediate between the parents and the children and be able to bring the fathers into our class and the mothers to the class to talk and really understand where some of the issues are with the child, some of the issues are with the parent, and help them to work it out. And it was very much successful. And it was through a program called YPA, and it was very much successful. We did it at South High School. We did it at Independence. We did it at Columbus. What is that? COS. We did it in a couple East High School. We did it at a lot of different high schools in Columbus, Ohio. But we did not have the funding to keep continuing to do it, but we did it anyway. We did it as long as we could, you know. So a lot of grassroots programs that have solutions to engage into school systems, they, you know, now the school systems are shutting doors. You know, you got these charter schools, they're more privatized. They don't want to allow different people from grassroots communities to interject, you know, into that. So even in the public school system, it's the same thing. It's like pulling teeth now. So, but there is a need for that to be instituted, especially for the Free Ohio Movement to institute a type of leadership and involvement with the parent and the children and getting them to participate in those activities and that education to be able in their socialization so they can come out the box, get out the box, to do something with these children to show that you cared. You know, I don't care if it's taking them fishing and you know, you go do some things to interact with them. Maybe they like to do some arts, crafts, or maybe they like to do some, you know, just do some fun things with them, you know, just to get them out the box. Then they'd be able to express themselves. So this, I mean, those are some of the things that we did in order to help to, you know, alter that. And then some of the kids see me today, and they see me and say, "Brother CPO program, your program was very, you know, so successful." Look, they went on to be doctors, lawyers, attorneys, engineers. And, you know, some of my best students went to the different HBCUs. So we made an impact. I'm just saying it's the little things like that that count.
Ashe.
And I yield
one
on
of
that.
The things. Thank you. One of the things that's posted on the Free Ohio Movement page on Facebook, it says the more things change, the more they stay the same. And there's one column on the left that says then, the other column says now. So I'm going to read these things off to you, and you tell me what your impression is of comparing then and now. So then we had prison. We had plantations. Now we have prison. Then we had overseers. Now we have prison guards. Then we had masters. Now we have, then we had slave catchers. Now then we had forced religion. Now we have the church. Then we had house Negroes. Now we have the petty bourgeoisie. Then we had lynchings. Now we have three strike policies. Then we had slavery. Now we have mass incarceration. What do you think about that post?
This is Brother Khalifa. I think that the analysis and the comparisons are right on, because that's exactly what you have. We are dealing with the exact same system. This is the thing that it's almost like Newton's law, how energy, once it's in motion. See, this evil thing, this specter of prison is hunting us all, everybody. So what it does is it just changes its face. It just changes its form. Slavery, that's what I'm saying, it has to be abolished, and it has to be abolished officially and completely, so that anytime you see it raise its head after that, then constitutionally you can bang its head. You can kill it, because all it has done is taken a new form. Same thing with slavery. Someone had a quote, and I was going to, oh, man, I wanted to get that quote, put it up. But they're talking about the very same thing in what you're saying, that plant, the word plant, like General Motors plant, Amazon plant is short for plantation. It's not short for something you grow. It's not an abbreviation for a vegetable. It's short for a slave camp. So all of these things are just the same. It's the same with the Klan. A lot of them, even though we show up in Charlottesville, a lot of them wear suits now. They don't wear sheets. They wear suits. They still wear cloth. It's just a different type. It's the same thing with the specter of slavery. It's like a chameleon. It's going to try to change its form. Even when we grab it by its neck and begin to choke the life out of it, still going to try to tell us it's not a snake. It's going to keep trying to change its form. And that's what you're seeing with the slave master and the police, the plantation and the plant. All euphemisms for the exact same thing that was going on in the 1800s. Just euphemisms. Are you?
You know, I want to say that your analysis is correct. We got to be able to give our people a chance to get out there to show that they can perform, they can excel, they can compete. And definitely the lack of opportunities, job opportunities that's been presented to them, is the reason why the poverty is the reason why our brothers and sisters go into the crime, life of crime, and get into all these other activities that railroad them into the system. You know, it's no mystery that a lot of corporate America don't desire us to be there in there with them so that we can compete. They don't want us to have the trades and the skills that they have. And therefore, you know, when you don't teach people how to fish for themselves or to get a certain type of skill, they become ignorant, and then they go on living life in an ignorant manner instead of being more constructive. So this is what we're starting to see. We're starting to see a dumbing down of our general society. And that's what is happening. You know, I've looked at when I was working in the neighborhood with some young brothers. I asked them. I said, "What would y'all rather be out here doing?" I said, "Would y'all rather be out here on the corner trying to push drugs, or would you rather have somebody who could pay you a nice prevailing wage job and be provide a living for your family?" A lot of them brothers said, "You know, I would rather be working a good job that I could provide for my family. I wouldn't be out here if that was the case. But I'm out here because every time I go job hunting, I get discriminated against. Or my credit's not good no more. In one way or the other, I'm discriminated against. And that's what's going on. We're facing the discrimination. And really, that's it's the new Jim Crow, like Michelle Alexander said, you know. So, I mean, that's what it is. Now you're on that one.
Ashe, thank you both for your feedback on that. Now, tomorrow, talk about what's going to happen tomorrow, where, give all the details and get people excited about making sure that they're there in Columbus, Ohio, on August the 19th.
Well, I guess August the 19th, we're going to build up. We've been building it up to let people know that there's a serious issue that we have to address. The human rights for prisoners prisoners is one of them. And the free political prisoners is another one. And to stop the mass incarceration to try to deter that is a must. So we got to pull our heads together as people. And I've been reaching out to a lot of comrades to help, to ask them to give their support, wear their red, black, and green in solidarity for the movement. You know, come and build with us, you know, and share their ideas with us. And in general, show that we have love for our brothers and sisters up there in the penal system, that they're not forgotten, that we do care about them. I've been talking with another brother from out of the penal system who's been very instrumental in this whole process too, Brother Sheikh Hassan. He's been an advocate for a while, and he's on the death row, and he is very passionate to making sure there is some changes in the prison system. So as well as yourself, Tahir, we have lengthy discussions on what we need to do to correct the,
hello,
the issue, community.
Yes, sir.
Ashe. We're going to be pushing. Okay, another thing we're going to be pushing too is to, you know, to deal with that wage that's going on in there. You know, giving them a fair, equal wage. You know, in the prison systems, we want to try to ban life sentencing for first time offenders. That's on the list of demands. There's a lot of things on the list of demands that we're going to be addressing during this event, and we're going to be doing it collectively, and it's going to be something education, but also it's going to be something fun that we could be socializing with each other, networking with each other, and we could provide some opportunities for the system, for us to intercede in that system. And I yield on that.
I'll say, but
who are some of the people that are said? Yeah, go ahead, Brother Khalifa.
No, go ahead. I just want to make sure you can hear me and I can get lost again.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, no, we can hear you. So who are some of the people that are going to be speaking tomorrow? You mentioned Imam Hassan, who has been on Sonny the Times quite a few times. And not only him, but Dee Jones and Rick Kirker, his attorney. As a matter of fact, every Friday night we have a broadcast called Brothers of the Sun. And those brothers represented not only confined citizens in the state of Ohio, but Alabama, Mississippi, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, Indiana. We had quite a few confined citizens that would call in and participate in that dialogue. And Imam Hassan was one of those people who we featured quite a few times. But, you know, what I'm finding is that people get the impression that because there's so much attention focused on the Lucasville Five and who they are, that their stories don't get an opportunity to be heard. And that's one thing that I love about being involved in the Free Ohio movement. It's not just about the entire state and the punishment that we receive disproportionately on a local level, city, county, state. We've got a lot of people, even those who were part of the original party, who are still confined, who are still having their freedom, if you will, as free as we can be on the outside, still held hostage from them. And so what are your thoughts on how do you define the political prisoner? And why is it that it seems as though they've gotten lost in the abyss of history? And a lot of people don't even know that there are still political prisoners that were involved in the freedom movement, the original freedom movement in the 60s and 70s, even up into the 80s. So why are our political prisoners still being confined for that long? And what's your definition of a political prisoner, NIU?
Great.
Well, you want me to tackle that first, Brother Khalif?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Well, you know, like Mumi Jamar Ali from the movement was politically confined, and you know, some of the Panther Brothers that was wrongfully accused of, you know, of acts that they didn't do. Or some of it may have was involved with some things, but they were doing, they should be out by now. Politically confined is for them to be, is them being associated with something that is about what is just the correct and injustice system. That's what you call politically confined. It's something, something that's been penalized to correct the wrongs that a system that was supposed to be right, you know, is called politically confined. I mean, you know, the system is quote unquote idealistically this perfect system by law. And people say, oh, by law, and definition, if they carry out the law, yeah, it's supposed to be in conjunction just, but the reality of it is not just, because there's no, it's not equal. You know, they don't give equal justice. So, I mean, for somebody to come out the norm and try to correct the things that were going on in the past because there was abuse in the community by the police, you know, and they stand up for the rights to defend, I guess, people who were coming in trying to mob them in their community, you know, and to just defend their community and just defend their right to be treated as a human being was a crime. So we had to correct the old thought of the system, the old, let's be real, the old white supremacy of the system, because that's what it is. I mean, to get down to the root of it was the old Jim Crow, old white supremacist thinking that got our people in the condition to where it is now. And, you know, and that was politically, that was, to them, it was politically politically incorrect. But for us, it was politically correct. So, you know, we did, dealing with that, it was a double-edged sword. So, you know, what was right for us because we were poor and disenfranchised was wrong to them because they want to monopolize and keep us the consumer. So that's the way I see it. You know, there's, I don't think there's a real true definition on behind that because of the broadness of it, but it encompasses all of that. Not yet on that one.
Did we lose your brother, Khalifa? Brother Asif, give me information, please, for tomorrow's event.
Okay. The information for tomorrow's event, we were supposed to have an African drum session, so an African dance session, and, you know, as the opening.
The venue.
For the venue, I'm sorry. We're supposed to have entertainment selection by a couple of young conscious artists. I think Ungain Creation is going to do their thing, of Mr. Columbus with the song Keep Your Head Up, and, you know, just a couple of selections. I just got informed that Minister Ashe Kajinga was willing to join with us to with the economic rights and solidarity with that. So he might come up and say just a few words, and then we were going to introduce Sister, we can't forget Sister Yvette Lang from 614 Unity. She's also on the diocese to speak at the event. Then yours truly, Queen Tahira, and then we're going to read the list of the demands that's been laid out in unison with the national rally in Washington, D.C. Khalif, I think Khalif is going to introduce you and bring you in. So, you know, Khalif is going to be speaking. Then Sheikh Hassan, I believe, is going to call and do a last introduction. Then we might leave out with an entertainment selection. So we kind of tweaked it a little bit, but we do have a full schedule. Brother Khalifa?
Yes, sir. There was a couple of things I wanted to address, but anyway, one thing, Queen, I didn't get a chance to address when you were speaking about the platform for the rally tomorrow. And actually, we got a national platform and we got a local platform. And the national platform has to do with the 13th Amendment, removing that exception for the Constitution, because we believe as abolitionists that that is the single henchpin that holds all this madness together. So if we can remove that, see, now you get rid of them clauses where inmates can't organize, where they can't unionize, where they can't ask for more pay, where they can't ask for better educational programs, where they can't ask for more humane living quarters, all those type of things, because the system does not have to be punitive. This is where we err at in the corrections in the United States. I know you got some horrible places in South America, different prison systems, but here in the United States, this is where we err at. We try to punish the entire time that we incarcerate somebody. That's not what it's for. The word penitentiary comes from penance, which means to repent, to change your life, to do better. And that's what the whole concept of the penitentiary was first used for. It was to sit you somewhere so you could stop and you could think for a while, but it didn't lock you up. And it was about producing a better person to come out and interact in society. So that's what we are fighting for on the national level. We want to remove the exemption on the 13th Amendment that says that slavery is legal if you're convicted of a crime. We want that removed. On the state level, then we're dealing with the things that plague the Ohio penal industry, the Sheriff's Department, the Montgomery, all of the county agencies, the city agencies that lock people up. We're dealing with all those different issues, but more than anything, we're dealing with the Department of Corrections because the Department of Corrections is where most of the evil takes place. I know. I'm not telling you something that somebody wrote to about. I'm not telling you something that somebody explained on the phone. I'm telling you what I live. So I'm not speaking from behind somebody else. I'm speaking for myself, and I'm speaking about this movement. And if we are going to do anything with regard to saving our confined citizens, we are going to have to remove that. You know, we can do other things in the meantime. We can help reform the commissary prices. They're out of control. 400-500% higher than some other places where you can purchase bank commissary items at. They got the phone system under control a little bit in there. It's a lot better. But there's a lot of reform work that we need to do on the state level, and that's what we want to address tomorrow more than anything. Mm-hmm. The death row, you know, as people as we are, we have to do something as barbaric as take somebody else's life. Even in this instance where somebody has taken somebody else's life, I know there's a lot of issues involved with this, but we have to find a more humane approach to dealing with corrections, period. I yield.
Sure. So we want everybody to show up. What's the name of the cafe?
New Harvest Cafe. And actually, New Harvest Cafe is where they'll come to, but he's got a cultural garden that's adjacent to it. That's where we're going to have the rally. It's just an excellent focal point. We're on a main avenue. And even the people that we haven't reached through social media and flyers and other contacts, they can just see us visibly. Pull up a chair. Pull up a chair and let's get busy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because what people don't realize is that it's just a matter of time. And I hear that often people are victimized by the state. That, you know, I didn't really believe that it was this bad until such and such and such, you know. So it's best that people get involved with the Free Ohio Movement. If you're not in the state of Ohio, you can get involved with the National Freedom and Justice Movement. We're just as active on a national level as we are on a statewide level because of the relationships that we took the time to forge with other confined citizens across the U.S. So, if you are looking for a way to get involved and you're not in the state, please reach out to me. I can connect you with other people who are a part of what we're building. And so as we get ready to close, I'm going to go ahead and let you all go a little bit early tonight. I found out that a good friend of mine who's actually like a mother to me passed away. So I'm probably going to go ahead and – yeah, in the night broadcast a little bit early, but can you talk about what inspired you to get involved in this process and how can you take your message and help inspire others to get involved? And I yield.
Who was that to?
Both of you, please.
Okay, go ahead, brother. Asifa?
Well, you know, I always worked with Queen Tahira for many years. So she was, you yourself were always an inspiration with a lot of the issues that were going on, you know, over the years.
Oh, squishy. No, I'm playing.
You know, when you call, you know, I mean, because really I was doing a lot of things. I'm going to keep it truthful. I was doing a lot of things. I know the prison, prison pipeline was a real situation, you know, and as far as Panthers, you know, we always wanted to advocate to be free and other political prisoners because of our fight to make our community self-sufficient. We got penalized for that. A lot of our comrades got locked up in that whole process. So I decided to take it on. It's a mission for me because I'm sick of our young men going directly to prison, you know, from off the streets, you know, because they don't have that because of lack of opportunities and a lack of guidance. And you know, so it became more so of a mission for me, you know, and to act on my sense of super purpose because I was once out there in the streets. And I've luckily had avoided going to the penal to the prison system, but I did get caught up in getting locked up in the juvenile when I was younger and things of that nature. So I my passion is to keep a young brother from going the same direction that I went when I was younger, you know. So and you know, each one teach one basically. So that's my passion. And me and brother Khalif, we met each other when he was just coming out. So, you know, I was teaching the children out there, working with the children in the community over there, teaching martial arts and you know, just doing interactive social things. So when I met him because I was interacting with his daughter and you know, and we became good friends ever since then. It's been how long, Brother Khalif?
I was in 88, I think, brother.
Yeah, I was young myself, wasn't I? We were younger, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, this, you know, me, I've always been a community activist. I'm always been for my people because I love my people. And I want to see us, I yearn to see our people free and liberated and economically prosper. So that's my passion. Ashe.
Ashe. Ashe. Brother Khalifa?
Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Well, my passion for this movement, and as I was saying earlier, has always been there. It's more redefined now because I got an organization that is moving in the same direction I'm moving in. So all I got to do is just step in and move with the organization, grow with the organization, help the organization grow. But I'm passionate about this because that's my alma mater. That's where I got my education at. That's where I got educated. That's where I got conscious. That's where I got saved at. I mean, a lot of people, you got some brilliant brothers and sisters in there, and it's a feeding ground for intelligence. It's like an underground movement inside there. And it's so much talent locked away that does not need to be locked away. You know, yeah, people have they've committed crimes, some of them horrible, you know. And, yeah, there should be some punishment for it. But it should be a better day sooner or later.
Mm-hmm. Ashe, I do have one more question for you. And that is, what do you have to say to the people that say, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime, that this whole prison freedom fight against forced labor and forced slavery is not one that they see as important. What do you have to say to those people that say, you know, pretty much, you know, if you can't do the time, don't do the crime? And I yield.
Well, sister, this is Brother Khalifa. Well, actually, that's a nice little rhyme. That's a cliche. It sounds good, but what about the people who have more time than they should have did on a crime? See, it's not about don't do the crime if you can't do the time, because it's a whole bunch of brothers that did 20, 30 years, whole bunch of sisters that did 20, 30 years, whole bunch of them went to the gallows, you know? So it's not about them not being able to do the crime, but are you going to rehabilitate them or lead them on a path to rehabilitation while you have them doing the time for the crime? And not just that, but what about their reentry? Are you going to have some structure in place for the punishing them when it happens home? Because I'm going to tell you, I was of the mentality, and I'm not of that no more. I've been home 18 years now, but I was of that mentality when I went to prison that if you wasn't going to do nothing to me, for me to help me get up on my feet, when I came home, after 7 years, you give me $75, I'm going to take everything I can from you. I was of that mentality because that's what prison produces. It produces that type of mentality with when you got a steering wheel in your back the entire time. You don't feel like coming out here working for nobody after the way you've just been treated for $11 cents an hour. You really don't. You do it because you have to reform yourself. They're not going to reform you.
Right. Okay. Brother Sifa?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was misdoing several things while he was talking. I guess you know when you looking at brothers that's coming out of the penal system, mm-hmm. They're looking for opportunities. And I guess where they're looking for opportunities, and I guess where I'm at with it is. I'm one of the brothers that see that we could give opportunities to our brothers that come out here and show them ways to correctively to operate within the confines of the system, because when they get out, a lot of them don't even know how to deal with the system because mm-hmm. they're so used to in a controlled environment. And it's way different when it's out here, because for one, there's a fear factor. You're from out the mm-hmm. prison system. You can't be trusted, you know. And these corporations out here actually say, well, why should we take the risk and it's a and a liability when we don't have to? So it's a common bond, brothers such as ourselves and sisters such as ourselves, to, you know, help to bring forth an opportunity to give these brothers and sisters a chance to compete, to show them that they got the skill to do what they say they could do. You know, the discrimination is real. And you know, I've been discriminated because I had a felon. You know, I didn't do time, but I had a felon when I was, you know, from when I was doing things when I was younger. But me learning from my mistakes has given me an opportunity to grow and create a pathway where others can avoid that same mistake that I went through. So, I mean, the whole goal of just taking a hand to one of these brothers and sisters out here that's trying to be in transition in the penal, from the penal system to into society, the reentry is very, very important. And in these grassroots brothers and sisters who care and be able to share the resources, give them the tools that they need to excel, to allow them to express their talents and to show that they can build their own, help them build their own business, teach them mm-hmm. how to go about their businesses, help them, teach them about how to micromanage their monies. And a lot of them, when they come out, they know how to do that anyway because they had to do that in there. But mm-hmm. to link them with the resources while we're here in state government, city government, community organizations, link them with the resources to that so they can compete, that they can excel, and that they can start their life over again without being penalized. So that's I think that reentry is very important. I call it taking their life back.
Mm-hmm. Well, with that being said, please give the address and location and time for tomorrow's event.
The address is 1675 Arlington Avenue, and that's off of Cleveland and Arlington up in the north side of Columbus, Ohio. It's called the New Harvest Cafe. The event will be kicked off at 3 p.m. and it's going to be a lot of people there, from a diverse group of people. Of course, a lot of our comrades are going to be there, you know, ready, willing, and listening to what's going on, and they're willing to give a hand. So just feel free to be a part of this thing, because it's a movement. At the end of the day, we got to build a movement, and movements don't go away overnight. We keep on building and building and building, and it's a lot of work that needs to be done. So everybody has a place. I'm just letting everybody know that. I say.
Okay. Brother Khalifa, you got anything in closing?
Hey, sister.
I said, do you have anything in closing?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. When tomorrow gets here at 3 o'clock hour, we're going to show up and show out. It's a Free Ohio movement, and it's not going to happen overnight. We're going to free Ohio. We're going to free Ohio. And I'm going to work with Free Ohio. I'm going to work with Free Ohio. We're going to make this happen. And If you come to the event tomorrow, make sure that your phone is fully charged. We want video footage of what's going on. We want pictures so that they can be posted to the different social medias. The media will be there. I've talked to the Associated Press. They will be on hand, as well as WOSU radio and newspaper, I mean television. They will be on hand, both of them. So please show up and show out. Ashe.
With that being said, I want to thank you for taking the time to be with us on a Friday evening. You could have been anywhere else, but you chose stand for those who have the unheard voices and those who cannot represent themselves because of their confinement. So I thank you for all the hard work it took to put tomorrow together, because I know it was not easy. And so this is just the beginning of better and brighter days and things to come. And like you said, we will free Ohio. So I just want to dedicate tonight's closing song as we leave the air to Ms. Janie Samuel. She was like a mother to me when I lost my mom. And I just want to dedicate tonight's closing song to her. I love you, Miss Janie. I will love you forever and ever. So we'll see y'all tomorrow night at 3. I mean, tomorrow at 3 o'clock there in Columbus at New Harvest Cafe. And like I said, and if you want to get connected with the freedom movement and you're not in the state of Ohio, please feel free to reach out to me as Queen Tahira on Facebook. And you can give me a call as well at 513-913-2691. I love y'all. I'll see you on Tuesday.
All right, Queen.
But he wants.